Good evening. Welcome to a brand new mini-series. We're going to talk about the Malacha of Kosev, writing on Shabbos. And it's going to be a little bit different than other parts of that which we learned about Shabbos. And you'll see why in the next, in about 10 minutes or so, it's going to be a little bit of a different kind of limud. First of all, we have to start each Malacha with knowing where the Malacha comes from. Where was Kosev done in the Mishkan such that it becomes one of the 39 Malachos? So anyone know where the Malacha happened in the Mishkan? Where did they write?
On the boards.
On the boards. You're a teacher. I know that. What kind of, they had chalkboards, whiteboards, smartboards, what kind of boards they wrote
on
the Mishkan?
On the boards that they built the Mishkan with to show which one where.
Okay, so the Mishnah Meseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Beis Amud Beis says that all of the board, the Krashim in the Mishkan, I don't know how big the Mishkan was. We mentioned it about 3 weeks ago. Is the Mishkan bigger or smaller than this room?
Small.
About how many Mishkans would fit in this room?
Three.
That's what we said, right. Okay, yeah, the Mishkan was about a third of the size of this room. It was 10 amos wide and 30 amos long. That's about a third of the size of this room. Half the size of this room. And each keresh, each of the planks that comprise this mini, again, the chatzer with the curtains were around it, that was much bigger. But the actual body of the Mishkan, there was two-thirds, and then the back third of 10 by 10 was the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The front two-thirds, which was 10 by 20, altogether it's 10 by 30, right? 10 by 10 plus 10 by 20 is 10 by 30. The front two-thirds had the Mizbeach, it had the small Mizbeach. The Mizbeach HaKetores, the small golden one. Had the menorah, it had the shulchan, and then the back 10 by 10 had the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where the Aron was situated. Now, this 30 amma long and 10 amma wide Mishkan had a number of krashim. How many krashim did it have? Well, I know we don't have any math majors here. All right, oh, you're here this week. Okay, usually it's just nurses and occupational therapists. Tonight we have, okay. Thank you for coming back, we appreciate it. You know, bring the adding to our variety. So let's figure it out. Each keresh, let's say one side of the Mishkan is 30 amos. If each plank is 1.5 amos wide, how many planks does it take to complete one wall? Besides the chaver. Again, I'll say it slowly. 30 amos long, each one is 1.5 amos. So 30 divided by 1.5 is? Let's try that again. 30 amos long. And each keresh is 1.5 amos. So if I have 30 apples, and no, okay, what is it?
20.
It's 20. So that means there are 20 krashim on this side, on the, let's say, the north side, 20 krashim on the south side. How many is that altogether so far? 40, without getting into why, but there are 8 on the back side. But actually 6 are probably, without, okay, we won't get into it. It's around 50 krashim or so, without getting into the details why the extras. About 50 krashim. Each of those krashim were situated in a certain place. So you mentioned that we wanted each of the krashim to be in a certain place, so we would label each keresh, and we would know which one to put next to which, right? I have a very simple question. If each keresh was 1.5 amos wide, identically built, same wood, same everything else, why does it matter where you put which one? They're all identical. Why do you have to mark each one so that each one is placed in the right spot? They're all identical.
They have to fit in a certain direction. Like, they fit into...
The sockets. No, the sockets were identical also. All the sockets were the same that they fit in. They did fit into sockets on the floor, heavy metal sockets that just had a hole in the middle for the krashim to fit into. The answer is, the Yerushalmi asked this question. The Yerushalmi says, we learn it from a pasuk. The pasuk says, bari the Mishkan, when you should, again, not build the Mishkan, but stand it up, right, it was already built. You just had to stand it up and take down and re-stand it up and stand it up again. V'hakemosa, Es HaMishkan, and an extra word, Kemishpato, like it's supposed to be. What do you mean? How else should I stand up? I should stand up the Mishkan. Don't stand up the Mishkan not like it's supposed to be. Rather, stand it up like it's supposed to be, in the regular way. What's the regular way of standing up the Mishkan? So here, the Chazal understand, from that extra word, k'mishpato, it has to be the way it originally was. The first way they stood up the Mishkan, that's the way they have to stand the Mishkan up every subsequent time. And therefore, the Mishkan always has to be stood up in the same way. This Keresh is over here, it's going to be over there forevermore. This Keresh is over here, it'll be there forevermore. And therefore, we have to label each Keresh. We had to label each of these planks, so we know where to put them, so that they could be stood up k'mish patam in their regular way. And that's where we see writing in the Mishkan. Yeah.
Is that considered avoda as a Mishkan, or is it going up the Mishkan?
This is considered construction, not avoda. Without getting into that. It's the opposite. Everyone agrees to the construction. The question is about avoda. We'll leave that for now. Okay. So we find out that there's one of the 39 malachas is you can't write just like they wrote on the boards. How much can you not write? Meaning, if the malacha is marking in the Mishkan, so that one board knows where to be in corresponding to the other board, well, you could only have a corresponding match between two boards if you have two markings, two letters. You have an aleph here, the next one is going to be a beis. If you have an aleph, and that's all that you have, a board marked aleph, that doesn't help you diddly squat regarding all the other boards. So the minimal amount of significance or usefulness is only going to be if you have an aleph that you could put next to a beis, or a q that you put next to an r. Q, R, right? Okay, good. So therefore, uniquely by Kosev, when the Mishnah lists all the different 39 malachas, it doesn't tell you how much you have to do for this malacha and for that malacha. When it comes to Kosev, it says the name of the malacha is called Kosev Shtei Osios. That's the name of this malacha. It's not called Kosev. It's called Kosev Shtei Osios. Writing two letters. That's the name of this malacha. Now, by the way, there is one opinion that we don't mark, that we don't paskin like, and this is a very big chumrah. You'll see why. Rabbi Yossi says the following. He says, what did you need to do in the Mishkan? You needed to make some kind of identifying mark that would be able to show us which board matches which board. They didn't have to do that with the Aleph Beis. They could just make a little squiggle, a little dash, a little apostrophe, a hyphen, a slash, a front slash, a back slash. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, any marking, even if they're not letters, would be sufficient to indicate what we want to do about which keresh goes subsequent and connected to which other keresh. And he holds that you're going to be chaya for making any two marks on a piece of paper, based on what was necessary in the Mishkan, any two marks. We don't follow that. We hold that you actually do have to write letters. If you write something that is not a letter, then you're not going to be chayav. You're not going to be violate the Isser D'Oraisa of writing on Shabbos. However, before I take the question, what happens if you only write one letter? When does this happen?
You only have one board.
Right, but when does it happen in like real life, when you're not building mishkans in your living room? So sometimes you might be, you wake up in the morning and forget that it's Shabbos and you start writing, I don't know what. That happens. What happens if you write one letter? Is that not the malacha? The malacha is hakosesh de osios. So it's not going to be chayev, definitely not chayev. When I say chayev, by the way, the word chayev always means three things in Hilchos Shabbos. Again, it's a very specific point. The word chayev, as opposed to pater, or aser, or mutter, the word chayev always means three things. If a person does it by mistake, then they have to bring a karban chatas. If they do it on purpose, but without witnesses, then there's a chiyuv kares, whatever chiyuv kares means. And if a person does it with two eidim, who warn them, don't do it, and the person responds, I know that it's aser, and I know you're going to kill me, and I couldn't care less, that person gets killed. That's what the word chayev means. So if you write two letters, then a person will be chayev either if they do it by mistake, they have to bring a korban, they do it on purpose without eidim, they get kares. If they write two letters with a warning and they don't care and there are witnesses, then there's skila. What happens if you wrote only one letter? So you're definitely not going to be chayev. So all of those three consequences that we mentioned will not apply. But is it mutter? Is it asu d'rabbanan? Is it asu d'oraisa? So here, we have to take a little hike. We're going to go to Hilchos Yom Kippur. Hilchos Yom Kippur is a very, very, very important Mishnah that a lot of people don't know. But it's not that a lot of people don't know it. A lot of people do know it, but they misunderstand it. Let me first present the scenario, and then we'll talk about the psak halacha l'maisa for Yom Kippur. You have somebody who has a really bad headache on Yom Kippur. And they have a choice. They could either spend all of Yom Kippur in bed with a splitting headache. They're not going to be able to forget about going to shul. They're probably not even going to be able to say vidui, even at home. Or they could take the tiniest sip of water. That will, you know, just clear them up and do wonders for them. Tiny sip of water. But how much water am I talking about? I'm talking about smaller than this. Tiny, just a tiny, 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 tiny sip of water. Is that mutter or is that aser? That is aser. Is that aser midrabbanan or aser midaraisa? Okay. Let me tell you the next question. Somebody is pregnant. And they heard from, it might not be any statistical studies that this is based on, but they heard that fasting and dehydration, everyone agrees dehydration is not good, whether a person is pregnant or not pregnant. But they hear that it's not good to be lacking liquid, so therefore they figure that, and they want to go to shul because they've gone to shul their whole life, so they figure they want to go to shul. So on one hand, if they stay home, they'll maintain their liquids better. On the other hand, if they go to shul, it's going to be harder, so they'll figure they'll take one tiny little sip of liquid, they're pregnant anyway, and just a tiny little sip of liquid, like every hour, they'll take one little sip. Over the course of a day, it'll add up. So is that mutter, asa d'rabbanan, or asa d'oraisa? So both of those situations are asa d'oraisa. Less than a kazayas. When we talk about liquids, we talk about a lo lugmav, not a revius. And lo revius for other halachas, for Yom Kippur, it's lo lugmav, a cheekful. It's asa d'oraisa to have the smallest amount of consumption of food or liquid. Oh, but you always heard people saying you have to measure this amount and measure that amount. That's talking about for people who are in a situation of sakanas nefashos, the diabetic, God forbid, who has to manage their insulin intake or their whatever else they have to manage, somebody else who is in danger of dehydrating. There, we will say a person should ideally do something that's only asur d'oraisa and not chayav karis, like eating a full amount of eating on Yom Kippur. And therefore, a small amount, less than whatever the shear is, it's not really a kazai, it's some other shear, whatever the small, tiny sip or bite that a person would take, that would be asur d'oraisa. Why? Because there's something called chatzi shear. And all over the Torah, we have a concept that whenever you violate something, there is a minimum amount that you have to do to violate. So for example, let's say, anyone here like drinking blood? No one likes drinking blood. Okay, I won't get into details, but last week we took my shiur, one of the shiurim to Shechita place. It's actually fascinating because there's a person here whose wife used to come to our shiur, and he came over to me and said, Rabbi Orlin, is it okay if I don't? You see, I'm the only one in my family who's not a doctor, and that's why I'm going for smicha, because I'm very queasy. Is it okay if I stand near the back? I don't really watch what happens. I say, no problem, that's what I do. So he stands near the back. Anyway, an hour and three quarters later, we have to go because the first shechita actually ended up being treif, so he had to do another shechita. But the class had to go because they had to get back here to yeshiva. And the only two people who wanted to stay to see the next one was this guy who an hour and a half ago was queasy. I guess maybe he's going to switch out of smicha and go to medical school now. Okay, I'm glad I had a part in that. So everything, okay, so why did I go into shechita? You want to drink blood. See, let's say you want to drink blood. Now, in order to be chai for drink, let's say you don't want to drink blood. You want to be a nazir. Could women be nazirin? No, they could be naziros. Yes, a woman could be a nazira. Why is that so? Because the Torah says, ish o isha, who says that they become a nazir. So the pasuk says. So a woman could be a nazir. So let's say you become a nazir and you drink wine. How much wine do you have to drink to violate drinking wine as a nazir? How much blood do you have to drink to violate drinking? The violation of drinking blood. How much do you have to do anything to violate anything? There's always a shear. There's always a minimum quantity. Minimum quantity is called a shear. Shi'ur. Not like the shear you're coming to. There's no quantity. You go to as many shiurim as you want. But there's always a minimum amount that you have to consume or do to violate any isur d'oraisa. If you have less than that, any iota less than whatever the requisite amount is, that's called a chatzi shir. Chatzi shir doesn't mean half. 95% or 5% are all chatzi shir. Less than a full amount that makes you chayav. Chatzi shir is asur mida araisa. It doesn't carry with it any punishments. Therefore, you'll never have to bring a korban for violating avera. A person will never get karis for violating that avera. A person will never get a death penalty for violating that avera. They'll never be chayav, but it will still be asur d'araisa. So therefore, on Yom Kippur, and this is halacha l'maisa, a person, unless there is some life-threatening situation, in which case they are allowed to drink or eat, of course they should try if they can, like a person who has diabetes, if they could so schedule this and arrange this, should try to plan beforehand to have less than the shiur of whatever the shiur for achila is and whatever the shiur for drinking is, and arrange that before based on measuring what the amounts are. Why? Because they have to violate what the Torah says to keep themselves healthy. They have to do that. The question is, it's better to violate the Torah in a minimum way than in a way that they would be chayav kares, which is a more severe way of violating halacha. So, just like we see by Yom Kippur, that chatzi shir is asur midaraisa, and I told you that here by writing on Shabbos, the minimum quantity of writing is two letters, and I ask you, what would be the din if you wrote only one letter? The halacha would be that it will be chatzi shir, which is asur min ha-Torah. So writing one letter is also asur daraisa, but it will not carry with it any of the consequences that we mentioned, the three consequences. A person will not be chayav. They will not be chayav chatas, they will not be chayav kares if they do it on purpose, and even if they do it with warning, and even if they do it with witnesses, they will not be chayav the death penalty for writing one letter. We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. Thank you. Before we talk about the material, both of the material that you write with and the material that you write on, this is just a question for fun. Let's say, whether you forgot, did it on purpose, or did it by mistake, it's somewhat theoretical. Maybe it's not theoretical. Let's say, we say that two letters is chayav. One letter is asur daraisa, but there are no consequences. Two letters carry with it a chiyuv with all the consequences that Chilul Shabbos entails. What happens if you write a whole paragraph with, I don't know, 50 letters, right? Text message could be up to 60 or 160. 160, thank you. You write longer ones than I do. Okay, so a text message could be 160 letters. Well, the spaces also count as characters. So let's say you have 140 letters. So does that mean you're going to have to bring seven? If I write a full text message till, you know, you have exceeded your limit, so how many animals am I going to have to bring when Mashiach comes? Let's say it's 140 characters that I typed, or that I wrote, let's say. We'll get into typing some other time. Let's say we consider I wrote 140 characters. So do I now have to bring 70 little sheep? If I did it by mistake, I'd have to bring a Korban Chatas. So am I going to bring 70 Korban Chatases, or am I just going to bring a really big, hefty Korban? What do you say? Who says I have to give what? I have to give 70 different Korbanos?
Did you do all one shot, or did you like come back multiple times? Like, did you write like 100 characters and then come back like 20, come back another?
I sat down, and that's actually a good question. I don't want to get into that, because that's going to be very detailed in the halachas of Korban Chatas. So we won't get into that. I won't answer your question, because it is a very good question. But without getting into those details, I'll just humor myself, even though you are right and what I'm about to say is not exactly halachic. But theoretically, do I have to bring 70 karbanos for the 140 characters, or just one big karban chatas? You'd say one, right? Now watch what we're going to do. We're going to go on a different hike. Not to the Shechita house, not to Yom Kippur. We're going to go to Hilchas Gittin. Listen to this. In Hilchas Gittin, the Shulchan Aruch writes that if a sofer writes a get on Shabbos and a get is given on Shabbos, so the get is pasul. The divorce did not happen. Why not? Because who wrote the get? Somebody who's a Mechal Shabbos. And a Mechal Shabbos who writes a Mechal Shabbos is pasul, is not kosher for writing a get. And if a Mechal Shabbos wrote the get, it was written on Shabbos, so it's not a good get. Get is meaningless from a halachic perspective. Now, wait a second. In order to have a halacha of a Mechal Shabbos, it has to be that a person is Mechal Shabbos regularly or consistently or numerous times. If a person wrote a get, that was the only time they were ever Mechal Shabbos, why are they called a halacha of Mechal Shabbos b'farhesia? They only did it once. And therefore, if they only were Mechal Shabbos this one time, then it should be, they're not considered real Mechal Shabbos. And therefore, it should be a good get. The answer is, the poskim over there in Hilchos Gittin say, that every two letters that a person writes is an additional, distinct, independent violation of an Isser D'Oraisa of Ksiva, of writing on Shabbos. And therefore, if they wrote that text, that get with 100 letters, depends on how long the people's names are and how long, you know, if they live in Ridgefield, Twin Rivers, or something like that, as opposed to, you know, Boca, or something short, that will also depend on how many letters are in the get. But if they have 100 letters in the get, they violate Shabbos 50 times. And therefore, they are a real qualified Mechal Shabbos Bifar Hesia, who is not a kosher sofer to write that get. So it's incredible that just in learning these three halachas in Hilchas Kosei B'Shabbos, we went to Hilchas Yom Kippur to learn Chatzis Shir. We learned to Hilchas Get to learn what happens if you have more than a shir. It's fascinating, yeah. That's a great question. I don't have an answer for you. I like your question. I like your question. Okay, yeah.
What about a chatzi
letter? Excellent. What happens if it's not a letter? Until now, we were talking about a chatzi shir. I mean, the shir is two letters, and you wrote half of two, which is?
A quarter.
No. Let's try that again. Yocheved, you must be in pain. If I'm in pain, Yocheved, you must be in a lot of pain. Okay, aren't you a sciences major, though? Aren't you, you're not in sciences? You're also an occupational therapist? Okay, fine. Yeah, makes sense. Okay. You can go write an essay now. Okay, so you have two letters to violate Chil Shabbos of Ksiva. What happens if you have half of that? How many do you have?
One.
Right. So one letter is Chatzi Shir. You're asking what happens if you have less than a letter. Excellent question. So I would assume... Because this is not even a letter. It's like not even writing. That's what the question would be. I haven't seen the answer to your question. I don't know. I will say, you remember I mentioned this opinion that we don't paskin like, who says that any mark would already be also. So according to that opinion, it would be a problem, but we don't paskin like that. So I don't really know the answer to your question. If you wrote half a letter, would that be definitely not chayev? Would it be also d'oraisa? I would assume probably not. It would probably be Asid Rabbanan.
And does it matter what type of letter it is?
We're going to speak about which language constitutes writing soon. Is it only Hebrew? Is it going to be other languages? We'll talk about that either at the end of tonight, but probably next week. Okay? Fine. Now, let's talk about a very important question. But before we do, I have to take a poll. Who here is a righty? That is fascinating. Keep your hands up. Everybody look around the room and you'll see every single hand that's up is a right hand. That is incredibly fascinating. 100%. I shouldn't have said that first. Okay, who here is a lefty? Okay, now I'm confused. Okay, we're 66% up with raise their left hands. Okay. So what happens if you write with your right hand, your left hand? Do you only violate writing on Shabbos if you write with your right hand? Or, I'm talking about righties now. Righties, for most of halacha, are considered the normal people, no offense to anybody. And to show that it's not offensive, I married one, who is not from the normal type. Please don't present it like that. What? I asked you not to be offended. I think it's just that statistically most people are righties, so that was considered normal. Nothing more than that. But don't worry, we're gonna validate you very quickly. So the Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah says that somebody who writes Shtei Osios is Chayav, Bein Bimino, Bein Bismolo. Whether they wrote it with their right hand or their left hand. So what do you see from the Mishnah, Ilana? You see that the Mishnah was not prejudiced. The Mishnah was very PC. And equa something or other. The problem is the Gemara comes right after the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, I don't understand. Who are we talking about in this Mishnah? If we're talking about a righty, so how can you be chayav for writing with your left hand? That's not normal. And if the Mishnah is talking about a lefty, then why should you be chayev for writing with your right hand? Meaning again, the Mishnah said that you're chayev for writing both with your right hand and with your left hand. And then the Gemara comes along and says, that can't be, it just doesn't make sense. It's not kedarko. It's not the normal way to write. If you're writing, then the normal way to write is with your right hand. So you should only be chayev for writing with your right hand, and not with your left hand. And if you're a lefty, so you should only be chayev for writing with your left hand, and you should not be chayev for writing with your right hand. So what kind of person could our Mishnah be talking about? So before we get to the Gemara's answer, I have to tell you the best basketball quote in all of history, which was mentioned, I think, Rabbi Lerner. I don't know, where is anyone here when Rabbi Daniel Lerner spoke in Shul 3 weeks ago? He quoted this, okay, Charles Rackleford. I don't remember if he's a college basketball player or an NBA basketball player. So he was speaking on an interview. He was being interviewed live, and he was telling the interviewer what a great basketball player he was. And apparently what he told the interviewer was, and here's a direct quote, talking about he could do everything, right? Left hand, right hand, it don't matter. I'm amphibious. So that's the Gemara's answer. That somebody who's chayev for both, how can you be chayev for writing on Shabbos both with your right hand and your left hand? If you're amphibious. So if you're amphibious, if you're ambidextrous, says the Gemara, then that's the only time that you could be chayev for writing with both your right hand and your left hand. Other than that ambidextrous person, which are few and far, anyone here ambidextrous? No one's here ambidextrous except for myself, okay? So, anyone, since there are not so many ambidextrous people, this prior halacha of the Mishnah is not so common to apply, and therefore halacha lamaisa, one is chayev only for writing with their stronger hand. So if you're righty, a person will only be chayev. Again, when I say chayev, I mean it will have the three consequences of, if you did it by mistake, you'll have to bear karbon chatas. If you did it on purpose, without any witnesses, there's a chi of kares. If you did it with witnesses and a warning, and you ignored it and you said you don't care, then there'll be chi of skila. If you're writing, if you're a left-handed person, you'll only be chayev if you did it with your left hand and not with your weaker hand. Yeah, question. So that's what we'll talk about. So is this a regular halacha of shinui, or is there something unique to writing with your right hand and your left hand? And I'll tell you what I mean. Exactly. Writing might be different than other malachas. For example, let's say for whatever purpose, let's say I'm going to the hospital on Shabbos for whatever reason, and I have to take an elevator for whatever reason. So I have two choices. I could use my right hand or my left hand. So what would I do? Okay. Next question. I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just going to ask a few questions. Next question. Next question. I could either use my pointer or my pinky. What should I use? Okay, I could either use my finger or my nose. What should I use? I've done that before. I have. I've gone to the hospital on Shabbos, and I pressed the elevator button with my nose? My nose or my chin? One of the two. It works. It really does. I got there. So the answer to the first question, in terms of your right hand and your left hand, so in these halachas of ksiva, where we're talking about right-handed or left-handed violation of malacha of kosev, the Mishnah Brura, I think, points out that the difference between right hand and left hand is only by writing. Only by writing is there any distinction between doing it with your right hand or doing it with your left hand. Why, Joanna? Because when Joanna writes with her left hand, you can't read what she writes. So, therefore, it's not just that it's a shinu, it's that the shinu is a... It's that there's a difference in the totsa'a. There's a difference in the result of the malacha. It's not just that I did a different act, and here there's a subtle point that I'm saying here. It's not just the act was different, the act was not normal, or not regular, or not kedarko. The resulting result... That's good. The result of your act was also different by virtue of the fact that there was a difference in how you did it. As opposed to, and if I press the elevator button with my right hand or my left hand, they equally get me to whatever floor I pressed. Unless if you press the right hand one, you hit one of those buttons, and the left one, you hit one of those buttons. But if you hit the right button, it doesn't make a difference. If you flick on a switch, a light switch, does it make a difference if you turn it on with your right hand or your left hand? The act was different, but the result was identical. And therefore that will not be considered a shinui. As opposed to writing, where even though you just changed your hand, the result is very different. However, that's as far as right and left hand goes. So therefore, when it comes to right, if for whatever reason, let's say, and I'll tell you some very significant cases, let's say we're going to the hospital on Shabbos, and I have to sign, they're not gonna treat whoever it is they have to treat until I sign my name on the line that I will be responsible for the $250,000 that the next 4 hours of hospital stay will cost. So I have to sign, otherwise they won't treat. Which is, by the way, not the rule, because hospitals in America are bound to treat regardless of if you'll pay or not. Just keep that in mind. So I have to sign. And of course, halach l'maisa, you could always tell the person, I went to the hospital a few months ago for one of the kids, and it was Friday night, of course. And I just told the guy who came around when in the ER, I'm Sabbath observant. So in Colombia, it's easier. It could be like if you go to like Albuquerque, you know, he'll say Sabbath is tomorrow, not today, buddy. I'm sorry? All right, there they might be friendly. There they'll actually. They certainly speak English there, though, right? Right. Forget that. So halach l'maisa, you should of course tell the person, I'm sorry, I'm a Shabbat observer, I can't write, and they'll fill it in for you. But if whatever the case would be that you have to write, is there any, how should you write, how should you sign your name? Sign your name with your left hand. And also, you could probably, what's he doing, a signature? No, you don't have to write anything. Just, whatever. Okay. However, give me one more minute just to finish this point. However, even though we said that writing with your right hand or your left hand does make a difference, but doesn't make a difference for other malachos, meaning for switching on a light, that will not make a difference whether it's your right hand or your left hand because you end up with the same light. When you do a different kind of shinui, not just change your right hand versus left hand, if you do like hand versus chin or hand versus nose, there pressing an elevated button with your nose is very different. That is significantly different. It's really different. So even though you got to the same floor in the same time that would have taken to press with your hand as with your chin, there, since it's a significant difference, it is a lower level of violation of halacha. It is only going to be derabanan as opposed to whatever you pressed might be deraisa. And therefore, you should do a shinui if you have to flick on lights or if you have to press an elevator button. But when it comes to just changing the hand, that's not going to, using your left hand to press an elevator button or to flick on lights, left hand, right hand, doesn't make a difference. Okay, question.
Leva. Two questions. This must sound like a weird question, but let's say you sign the person.
That's a great question. I was thinking about that recently. If you sign with all attached letters, will that therefore be considered like one letter you're saying and maybe you don't violate anything? I didn't see an answer to that. But I do think that since that is normal writing, that is a normal language, that it would be chayiv midaraisa. That would be considered two full letters.
Okay, I think. And with the left hand, right hand thing, are we being machmir or make a saying you can use your left hand? Because that probably comes out worse than me doing like an offhand or something.
If you could do it even, like if you could write with your, if you could write with your teeth, with your toes, with your, whatever other way that you could write, that's probably better. If you can't, so the left hand will still be better than your right hand. So, better than your right hand is your left hand. Better than your left hand is, like the Gemara says, the Mishnah says it specifically, holding your hand upside down, doing it with your feet, baraglo, befiv. It says befiv in the Mishnah, actually. You should do it with your mouth, with your holding the pen like this. Those would also be better. Those would only be asur derabanan. Okay, yeah.
Is there a substantial difference between writing, say, two olives with your left hand in your writing versus writing two yuds with your left hand? Because a yud with your left hand is the right hand is going to be the same.
You're saying if there's a letter that is equally
legible
if you do it with a right hand or a left hand, will that therefore make you chayev on your left hand? I don't know the answer to that. It's a good question. Now let's shift away from hands and away from how you write and how much you write to the next topic, which is very halachah. Until now, basically, everything was usr. I don't know if you noticed that. Everything was usr. Just the question, was it usr only d'rabbanan? Was it usr d'oraisa? Or is it usr more than d'oraisa? You're actually chayev, one of the three, you know, either chatas, kares, or skila. But everything, I might have made things sound like I gave you a cooler or two. I said everything was usr. Every single case we mentioned until now was usr. Now, let's talk about cases that are really, really practical halacha l'maisa. So we'll start like this. When my wife was living in Eretz Yisrael before we got married, she was there for a number of years. Her parents made aliyah. She went to Israel. She stayed on. Her parents made aliyah like a year after she went to Israel. And so so she had her zichliyot. And those who know about aliyah, the zichliyot that you get now are nothing compared to what they were then. She was able to buy a car without tax. So she had, before her 5 years of zichliyot ran out, in the 4.5 year, she bought herself a car, which was great, because then when I got married to her and we lived in Israel, I was one of those rich kolo guys who had a car. Wow. Okay. So, being that she's from Toronto is a place where it's cold, she bought a car that was black. Now, there are two problems with black cars in Israel. First of all, black absorbs heat. It's not good in places that are hot. The second thing is that Israel has a lot of sand and dust. And that means if the wind blows more than like a mile an hour or a kilometer, 1.6 kilometers an hour, there's going to be dust on your car and your car will turn, not black, it was black, your car will turn light brown. So what happened every week? Every week we'd have a car that was a, you know, like they have in Toys R Us, those, you don't buy them, but you just pass by and touch it. Etch-a-sketch, not the things that you turn, like, you know, like, it's magnetic files, and you run your finger over, and you paint things that, do you know what I'm talking
like
about? Magna doodle, that makes sense. Okay, fine, something like that. So that's what the car looked like. It was like just waiting for you to pass by and, you know, please wash me, like, I desperately am in need of a bath, or something like that. People, they're not as nice things also. So is it mutter to write in that dust on the car on Shabbos? Next question. Let's say it's a frosty day outside and you have the heat on inside. Are you allowed to sort of, you know, write in the frost on the windows? That also happens on cars also. Is that considered writing? Is that mutter, usser, or chayev d'oraisa? Now, are you allowed to, let's say you have icing. Right? We know you have those small, big icing thingies that squeeze out, and then the small, little ones to write letters or fine things. Could you squeeze out your icing onto a cake in the shape of a letter, or even in the shape of a flower or something? Now, there are two ways to ask the next question. Could you write with ketchup? Now, why am I saying there are two ways to write it? Because you could just squeeze out the ketchup to write whatever you want, or you could do my kids' way of doing it. You have a thing of ketchup, and then you take your fingers, and then you, within the pool, you outline whatever you want to outline. And then, a little less gross, could you just draw your fingers in the sand? Is that going to be considered, you know, like SOS? What is it?
Save ourselves. Save our ship.
Okay, so if you're stranded, so, I guess that's the difference between the post can have a term called ba'al nefesh, yachmir al atzmo. A person is a ba'al nefesh, a person is a soul. You know, really it's mutter, you know, it's mikra hadin, it's really mutter, but if you're ba'al nefesh, you should be machmir. So I guess a ba'al nefesh calls it save our soul, the rest of us call it save our ship. Okay, so those are all the questions that we're going to answer relatively quickly. Let me share with you a Mishnah in Shabbos Daf Kuf Dalet. The Mishnah says the following. I'll read you two lines. First line and then the second line. First line talks about cases that you chayev. Kosav b'dio. What's dio? Ink. Sam. What's sam? Sam, samach mem? A medication, a potion. It means some kind of liquid that was colored. B'sikra, that was a red dye. and a bunch of others. V'chol davar shehu roshem, anything else that you mark with, that's made to mark, chayev, you're chayev. That is not just asud rabbana, it's not just asud raisa. If you write with anything that has a permanent mark, that makes you chayev d'araisa. However, kosav b'mashkin, if you wrote with drinks, b'meperos, and with juice, b'avak drachim. What's avak? Dust. What's a derech? What's avak drachim? Dust of the way. What is that talking about? It sounds very similar to, I guess, what was on our car. But just the dust from, you know, walking from that gets coated on something. But avak hasofrim. Now here you have to sort of imagine a different kind of ink that as they would write, as the sofer would write, some little flakes would fall down and you'd have like this little, I guess there's some crafts that as you work on it, there's a little bit like, imagine sawdust. The equivalent, except instead of you working with wood, you're working with like some ink particles that fall down and there's a little, you know, smattering of like particles. What? Yeah, maybe erases, but a little more since it's black and you sort of could make a design with your fingers in it. So all of these things, anything that is not mitkayem, again, it's not like ink, it's not like a, it's just something that, you know, will dry up at some point, or blow away, or wash away. Those are all things that are not mitkayem. Those are putter. What does the word putter mean in all of Hilchas Shabbos? The word putter in all of Hilchas Shabbos means it's not asur d'oraisa, but it is asur d'rabbanan. So therefore, every question that I asked, basically, is going to still be asur. However, all of the things that are not davar, that is mitkayem, that stays, that is maintained, that is permanent, they're only going to be asur d'rabbanan. So therefore, if you have, and the Mishnah Berurah talks specifically about the case of the a window that has a frost on it, if you write in that frost, it's not mitkayem, so therefore it's not asur d'oraisa, it's not permanent in any way, but it will, yes, be asur d'rabbanan. Similarly, writing in sand will be asur d'rabbanan. What about invisible ink? I'll tell you a fascinating story, and there's a true story. The Rav Harashi of Tveria visited YU about 2 months ago, and he gave a shiur in the Beis Medrash, and he gave a shiur of a shaila that came his way, and he shared his psak with us. Fabulous shaila. And the shaila was like this. Magen David Adom asked him the shaila. The shaila is that when Magen David Adom arrives, and there's Tveria has a lot of frum people, so a lot of people in Magen David Adom were frum, and the medics were frum, are frum. And the question was, when, right now, again, Baruch Hashem, with iPads, you could do a lot of wonderful things. You could do a lot of less than wonderful things, but you could do some wonderful things with iPads. Listen to the idea. The suggestion that some people had from Magen David Adom was, when medics arrive at the scene of an accident, they have to write down their, whatever the details, the person's name, tudat zehut, temperature, whatever, their vitals, blood pressure. Okay, then what happens? They get to the hospital. What happens in the hospital? They do the same thing again. The question was, to have an app or some program on an iPad will be provided to every ambulance, and even on Shabbos, you could type into the iPad whatever information that will send directly that information to the hospital and to wherever else, so nothing extra will have to be written. That was the shaila. Halacha l'maisa, that the Rav Hashi of Tveria was asked by Magen David Adom Tzafon. So, part of what the question really was is the act that you're doing is pressing buttons, right? We'll talk maybe about typing some other time, but the act that you're doing is not writing. You're doing an act of pressing a button. But the result of what you do, certainly if it's printed out, which it will be printed out, ends up being completely professional, right? It's even probably even nicer than what you write with your hands. So if you look at the act might not be an act of writing. If you look at the result of your act, which is typing, which will then be printed out, then it's certainly writing. That printer, that laser printer in the hospital or wherever else is going to print it out more beautifully than you could ever write it yourself. So that was part of the question. Anyway, halacha l'maaseh, without getting into details, I think he did paskin that they should get iPads, and you should just know, you should all be healthy and safe, but you ever find yourself in Tveria, and you find the Magen David Adom ambulance, you will find it will have an iPad so that the people on Shabbos, I guess they do it during the week also, will not have to be Mechal Shabbos more than minimally necessary. Which is fascinating. Halacha l'maisa, you see where the halachas of what we're learning. Now obviously here, we're talking about the question that he had to deal with wasn't is it mutter to do this or is it asr to do that? Everything is asr. It's a question of daraisa's level. Is it asr like chiv kares? Is it just asr daraisa? Is it just asr darabanan? The question is when you're dealing with a situation where you're going to have to violate something, the question is how much you have to be aware of what's going to be darabanan, what's going to be daraisa, what's going to be even more than just asr daraisa like a chatzi shir, what's asr daraisa that even has a chiv kares. Another important reason why it's important to realize, even though I told you every single thing, every case I mentioned tonight is asr. I didn't give you one thing tonight that's mutter. Not one. It's also important to know this, whether it's derabanan or daraisa, because sometimes we permit violations of isurim derabanan. For example, let's say I don't do it myself. I ask a guy to do something for me. Well, that's called Amir Lenachri, and I'll let ask a guy to do malacha for me. But if the malacha is only derabanan, so I'm asking him to do malacha, that's Amir Lenachri, which itself is only asur derabanan, for me to ask a guy to do something. And the malacha that he's doing is itself derabanan, it's still not mutter. But if I have three things together, I'm asking the guy to do something for me, which itself is only derabanan, and what he's doing is only derabanan, and it's b'makom mitzvah, then I'm permitted to do that. So if I know what is asur derabanan as opposed to daraisa, if I know that it's only asur derabanan and I ask you to do it when I have a need to do it, let's say for example, the shul forgot to buy, doesn't have grape juice, and we want to go to Rite Aid to get some kedem grape juice. They only have Welch's, so let's assume they have kedem grape juice. So Mr. Rite Aid is only going to give me the grape juice for the kiddush and shul if we write down an IOU. I can't write an IOU. But I could tell the guard, could you please go to Rite Aid to get me the grape juice? But he'll have to write it? Okay, so what if he doesn't write it? What if he only writes it with Avak Drachim or something like that? We could figure out a scenario where it might be significant for the fact that he writes in some way that wouldn't be permanent. Or perhaps if you have, what is it, Instagram? Instagram, if you send someone Instagram, then it goes away after, is that only the pictures?
Snapchat?
That goes away after how long?
My brother taught me that one.
How long? Okay, so there, it wouldn't be permanent. We said, the Mishnah says it has to be that you're writing with something permanent in order to be asur daraisa. If you start writing with something that's not permanent, it's only going to be asur derabanan. So if I have to send a message to somebody on Shabbos, let's say, for whatever significant reason, let's say you should just know so-and-so had to go to the hospital, so-and-so whatever. You know, let's say a dorm person in the dorm, the head of the dorms has to know that one of the students was taken to the hospital, whatever the situation would be. So here we just figured out, I could tell a guy to Snapchat it. Because,
what? To the guy who can't read it.
We'll figure that, okay. You could tell it to the, okay, we'll worry about those details another time. Let's finish. Oh, wait, you had a question?
I'm
you had a question. Great. So like if you have an Android and you say, okay, Google, or if you have an iPhone and you say, Siri? Thank you. I don't have an iPhone. So that's not kosev. You're talking about other malachas. You're saying, is that another malacha? Not kosev, but he's saying, is voice activation going to be... Oh, you're right. Text to voice to text. Thank you. If you write voice to text, excellent question. That's a great question. So if you have a voice to text program, you're just going to talk and it ends up printing the words. So there you end up with the result, but you never did an act of writing. That's a fabulous question. That's fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. You have the maisa, but you don't have the tetzah.
You should get back in touch with the doctor to marry because that was that one. I guess my question is the same as the
guy. Right, but the guy might be more kal because you're not doing it directly. Here you're doing it directly. That's a good question. Again, I don't think it would be mutter to do. The question is, what level of violation? I think that's a great question. I would love to look into that. Good question. Yes, Alana. Great question. That we'll talk about at some point. What if you write a symbol that's not a letter? Let's still get one or two more points, and we'll get to that. I don't know if we'll get to it today, but maybe the beginning of next week. We'll point out one or two more points. Just as the writing has to be with a writing that's a permanent kind of ink, as opposed to the things that are not permanent, like Snapchatting, like writing, the Mishnah said, with juice, or writing with dust, which is not permanent, or writing with frost, those are not permanent. Similarly, the thing that you write on also has to be permanent. So if you write on something, and I'm not sure what the good examples are, but what's something that if you write on it, it's there, and then it either just the thing itself sort of withers away? A leaf? Writing in the sand. Okay, so that could be a good example. Even though you did a full letter and you wrote, no, but there's no ink involved. You're writing a cookie, and the cookie's gonna get eaten. Yes, that would be the halacha. Yes, if the cookie's gonna be eaten, if we know the cookie's gonna be eaten within the next little while, we know that it will be eaten. So it's not the, even though the writing, even if I wrote with a pen, or with icing, but even if I wrote with a pen on a cookie, and I know the cookie's gonna be eaten, that will not be asur d'oraisa. That will only be asur d'rabbanan. Perhaps even a leaf. If we know the leaf like withers away, and whatever you write on it sort of just dissipates, that will also not be a permanent tablet, writing, you know, receptacle, the thing that gets the writing on it, that will also not be asur d'oraisa. Yeah. No, excellent question. What about a pencil or a pen that's an erasable pen? That will not be d'rabbanan. That will be asur d'oraisa. The reason for that is that it is a permanent writing. It happens to be you could erase it, and I'll prove it to you. Because one of the other 39 malachas is not just writing. Right after kosev shtei osios is another malacha. It's called mochek shtei osios. And in the same way that writing is only violated if you write with something that's permanent, mochek also applies to only something that was permanent. It's the inverse. It's the brother-sister malacha. And therefore, you only erase something that's permanent. That must mean that even though it's permanent, you can still erase it. So therefore, if you write with a pencil, you are chay of d'oraisa. I will finish with this. So I advise you, don't do any writing in any which way. If you really need to, tell a guy to do it, and do it with a shinui, not just your left hand, do it with some other shinui, and do it with invisible ink, and do it with Snapchatting. Okay, God willing, next week we'll talk about some more details in terms of writing. Then we're going to talk about, I'd like to talk about some very important questions that are halacha lemaisa, in terms of going places where there's closed circuit TV, in terms of going in places that you'll be videoed, in terms of baby monitors where there's a baby that's on video and you're going to be walking by to pick up the baby, which is a shiloh that I got a few weeks ago. Those are all shilohs of Kosev. And hopefully we'll talk about it next week or the following week. Have a wonderful evening. I do hope that we'll have something the week before Pesach. I'm not sure if it'll be a regular Monday night or a different night, night of Pesach, but we'll keep you posted. I don't know.